ओम हरिः ओम तत्सत् श्रीगुरुभ्यो नमः हरिः ओम ओम सदाशिवसमारम्भाम् व्यासशङ्करमध्यमाम् अस्मदाचार्यपर्यन्ताम् वन्दे गुरुपरम्पराम् श्रुतिस्मृतिपुराणानाम् आलयम् करुणालयम् नमामि भगवत्पादशङ्करम् लोकशङ्करम् शङ्करम् शङ्कराचार्यम् केशवम् बादरायणम् सूत्रभाष्यकृतौ वन्दे भगवन्तौ पुनः पुनः फर्स्ट् थिङ्ग् we should remember that study of the Upanishad is not for any academic interest. Study of the Upanishad itself is a spiritual pursuit. Because study of anything is for the knowledge. Study of physics is for physics knowledge, like mathematics is for mathematics knowledge. And what is the knowledge we expect to gain by studying the Upanishads? Knowledge of yourself. When I say knowledge of yourself, it is actually the knowledge of the self. Knowledge of the self means knowledge of the self of all. Knowledge of the self of everything. Knowledge of the self of everything means knowledge of the truth, reality of everything. And knowledge of the truth of everything means knowledge of the Lord, the truth of the Lord. Understanding of the Lord. So study of the Upanishad is for the knowledge of the truth. Knowledge of the self means what is knowledge of the truth for? Knowledge of the truth is for freedom. Otherwise called moksha. It is possible for one to say, I am not interested in freedom. Then if you are not interested in freedom, then this knowledge has no relevance. Then the study becomes meaningless. So for the study to become meaningful, purposeful, we should know the relevance of knowledge. The value of knowledge. And for us to know the value of knowledge, relevance of knowledge, we must know the benefit, value of the benefit we can gain by attaining the knowledge of the self. Which means we must understand what moksha is first of all. In my introduction to Vedanta classes, many times, repeatedly, it was explained, moksha is a masculine gender word meaning freedom, the synonym of which is muktihi, a feminine gender word. Vimochanam is a neutral gender word. And is freedom is a human being's ultimate end, absolute end. Why it is an ultimate end, absolute end? Because accomplishing this end, all other ends are accomplished as it were. Accomplishing this, no other end has to be accomplished. And it is a choiceless end because there is no choice about it. Everyone has to, one day or the other, in one life or the other, one has to definitely attain this. Why? Because unless and until one attains this, accomplishes this end, the life does not become complete. Life does not become meaningful. Life does not become absolutely successful. And life will be, the search in life will be a continuous, endless effort. Search for what? Search for happiness. Search for peace. Search for happiness, search for peace will never come to an end. You may deny thoughtlessly. If you really think carefully, you cannot deny the fact that every individual is desperately, ultimately searching for this absolute peace, everlasting peace, and limitless happiness only. And the fact is, the person who discovers this fact, basic fact, that moksha, freedom from unhappiness, is actually happiness, which is the implied meaning of the word moksha. So this happiness is a choiceless end. Nobody ever wants to be unhappy. Nobody wants to be unhappy means people who lived before, people who are living now, people who are going to be born and living in future also for granted will not like to be unhappy. People of all times, of all places, always wanted to be, want to be, will want to be happy alone. Therefore, this, if we really, we are taking much time here, happiness is a choiceless end. When there's no choice between happiness and unhappiness. And I want to be happy is a natural emotional urge, which you already understood in our introductory classes. And this happiness, if it comes and goes, then there's no point in making so much of effort to attain this happiness. This happiness must be a permanent happiness, everlasting happiness. If it has to be everlasting, permanent, then definitely it cannot come. Anything comes must go. That is the law and order. That is the order. Therefore, this happiness cannot even come. It must be already there. It cannot even change because it has to be changeless. It cannot come to an end. It must be always there, which means this happiness is already there, always there. And this happiness is a choiceless end. Then it has to be discovered. It has to be understood. If it is there, already there, where is it? How is it? How can we understand it? How can we arrive at it? How can I discover it? Then that is where the Shastram serves as a pramanam, as a valid means of knowledge for us to arrive at this happiness, not as something, as the very nature of the reality. See, we understand happiness not as a state of mind, but we will understand, we should understand the happiness as the nature of reality. If we do not even understand, we do not even know what reality is, how can we understand, how can we know the nature of reality? Therefore, understanding of reality is knowing the reality, is knowing the nature of reality. Knowing the nature of reality is knowing what happiness is. And knowing the reality is actually knowing the self. And therefore, this knowledge of the self itself is attainment of happiness, attainment of freedom. They are not two different things. Means and the goal are identical. And therefore, we call this knowledge a spiritual wisdom, a spiritual knowledge, because knowledge of the spirit, knowledge of the truth is, and it is a spiritual pursuit. Okay, and here we take the entire Veda Shastram first as students of the Shastra study. We must have tremendous amount of reverence, great reverence for Veda Shastram. Even if we did not have, we did not know. See, sometimes because of ignorance, we do not have reverence. We do not know the greatness of our scripture. But when you start studying, I tell you, Vedaha means we must have reverence. And you will discover more reverence as you understand the teaching again. So Vedaha is a body of knowledge, that whole text. And the whole Veda is in the form of words. And all the words which constitute the Veda Shastram, the scripture called Vedaha, consisting of words, the words are nothing but manifest expressions of manifest knowledge. Of course, any discipline is, any knowledge is words. The words are expressions of manifestation of knowledge. And here, Veda Shastram is a timeless scripture. It has no date, it has no specific author. We only have rishis who got these, the contents of the Veda Shastram revealed to them in the form of mantras. We'll understand every word later on very clearly. So Vedaha itself means knowledge, which is derived from the root with, to know. Veti, knows. Vedanam, knowing. Vedaha, knowledge. And here, this Vedaha, consisting of three parts. Karmakandaha, the first portion of the Veda, but the big portion of the Veda, the big and the first part of the Veda is Karmakandaha. Kandaha means section or part. Then the middle portion or the middle part of the Vedaha is Upasana Kandaha, which is relatively a smaller portion. But the smallest of the entire Veda is the last part or the end portion or the concluding part of the Vedaha. called Veda Antashastra. So Veda Purva Bhagaha, Veda Madhya Bhagaha, Veda Anta Bhagaha. Purva Bhagaha is bigger, Madhya Bhagaha is small, and smallest is the Anta Bhagaha, end portion. And end portion is called Jnana Kandaha. The content of the end portion deals with the knowledge of the truth. Therefore, it is called Jnana Kandaha. The middle portion, Madhya Bhagaha, deals with the meditations. Therefore, it is called Upasana Kandaha. It is a purely a mental activity. And the big portion, the first part of the Veda, Purva Bhagaha, is called Karma Kandaha, because that portion deals with all forms of rituals, the know-how of rituals and their results. So knowledge of the Karma Kanda will not give us the result unless knowledge is implemented in the form of performance of rituals. Similarly, the content of knowledge of the content of Upasana Kanda also will be effective only if it is, the knowledge is implemented in our practice of meditation. Whereas knowledge of the Jnana Kandaha need not be implemented, need not be practiced. Knowledge itself is the result. This is the difference between the contents of three portions, big, small, and smaller portions, which constitute the entire Veda. And even if we do not study, cannot study the entire Veda, it is important for us to study at least the Jnana Kandaha. Fortunately, the fact is, study of the Jnana Kandaha itself is enough to attain the benefit of studying the entire Veda. By studying the entire Veda also, what has to be ultimately attained, accomplished, is accomplishable merely by studying the end portion called Jnana Kandaha. And this Jnana Kandaha alone is said to be the Veda Antashastram. Entire Veda is called Shastram. Vedanta, end portion is Jnana Kandaha, is also known as Veda Antashastram. And this Veda Antashastram consists of Upanishads. And before going to the word Upanishad, we have to see the meaning of the word Shastram. Because the word Shastram is lucidly used in India for any discipline. Sangeeta Shastram, Natya Shastram, Ayurveda Shastram, Tarka Shastram, Mimamsa Shastram, Nyaya Shastram, Vaidya Shastram. Like any discipline of knowledge is lucidly meant by the word Shastram. But here, Vedaha is called Shastram. In fact, the absolute Shastram for us is Vedaha. They're all Shastrams. Anything which disciplines, contributes for disciplining the mind. Refining, mental refinement can be called shastram. Anything which contributes for the mental refinement of an individual can be called a shastram. Because anything which contributes for mental refinement protects the individual. An individual human being is really protected only when his mental refinement is taken care of. Emotional maturity is taken care of. The mentally unrefined, uncultured, uncivilized, emotionally immature person is unprotected person who needs protection, who needs to be looked after. So, anything which contributes for mental refinement, a certain degree of mental refinement, emotional maturity, can be called a shastra. Any discipline which helps, a study of which, any discipline, any field of knowledge, study of which contributes for the mental refinement of an individual can be called a shastram because it protects. But absolutely the meaning of the word shastram is Veda. Veda is the shastram. Others are not really shastrams. Veda is the shastram. Why Veda is called a shastram? Because first thing we have to say, shasti. The verb is shasti. Shas is the root and ti is the lat affix. As a lat verb, shasti means protects, sorry, governs. Shasti means governs. It belongs to second conjugation root. This is second conjugation verb, shasti, governs. What does the shastram, the teaching of the Veda governs the life of an individual? It governs our way of life. Governing the way of life means teaching the way of life. Teaching the way of life means showing us clearly the consequences of following the way of life and consequences, showing the consequences of not following the way of life. The way of life is prescribed. The way of life is enjoined by the shastram. Shastram does not tell us we should follow the way of life. Does not tell us we should not follow the way of life. Prescribes the way of life and points out the fact, the consequence of not following the way of life and the consequence of following the way of life. Once you understand the consequence of not following the way of life and following the way of life, and we ourselves will decide whether I should follow or not. And once you understand the value of following the value of way of life, you follow the way of life. That's how the shastram governs our lives, by teaching us the way of life, by pointing out the consequence of following and not following the way of life. Therefore, it governs shasti. By governing our way of life, by pointing out the consequence of following and not following the way of life, what does shastram do? ultimately it protects us. Trayate. Trayate is an Atmane Padam Lat. Shasti Trayate. Two verbs are there. So Shastram does two things. It teaches us the way of life. It governs our way of life. Thereby it protects us. Shasti Trayate. So in noun, Shasanam means governing. So it is said, Shasanat Trayate Iti Shastram. That which protects us by governing our way of life is called Shastra. Without using the verb Shasti, if you say Shasanam, governing, Shasanat Trayate Iti Shastram. That which protects us by governing our way of life is Shastra. Which means Shastra study will help us understand the way of life, will help us understand the value of following the way of life. Thereby Shastra study will help us live a life enjoined by the Shastram. Thereby it will help us enable us enjoy the benefit of following the way of life. Ultimately, it will bless us with the knowledge of the truth, the wisdom, and which is the culmination of living this life, which is the culmination of this life, which in the wake of which a human being becomes absolutely mature individual. The attainment of knowledge of the self, attainment of knowledge of the truth, is the ultimate purpose of the study, will result in what? Absolute maturity, absolute mental refinement. Wisdom makes the mind absolutely refined mind. When does a person become a totally mature, absolutely refined person, absolutely refined minded? It is in knowledge of the truth. Even following the way of life itself makes a person relatively mature. When it culminates in the attainment of knowledge, a person becomes absolutely refined minded. And that is how our protection is. Our protection is emotional. Protection is emotional. Protection is in maturity, refinement. Therefore, knowledge is protection. Knowledge is maturity. Knowledge is refinement, absolute refinement. Therefore, knowledge is protection. Refinement is protection. Therewise, knowledge is protection. So, being unprotected means being uncivilized, unrefined. And being unprotected is what? Being ignorant, being uncivilized, being uncultured, being unrefined, being immature, being unprotected. Unprotected means there is fear, there is anxiety, there is sorrow, there is grief, there is misery, there is hurt, there is guilt. All limitations. Therefore, the Shastram helps us understand the fact that human being is the most superior of all the beings, and a human being alone is blessed with this capacity. Human being alone can accomplish this knowledge, and a human being alone can really attain the zenith of this maturity, accomplishment. Therefore, knowledge, the Shastram means that which protects us by governing the way of life, that which gradually enables us to become absolutely mature individual. From being raw-headed, immature, gross-minded person, finally becoming the subtlest minded, highly mature individual is the growth, the process of growth, and the Shastram helps us. Therefore, the very word Vedaha itself, Veda, is the Shastram for us. And here, and this Veda Anta Shastram itself can give us the ultimate knowledge, the ultimate benefit of studying the entire Veda. And Vedanta Shastram consists of many small, small texts known as Upanishadaha, Upanishat Takaranta Strilinga Shabdaha. Upanishat is a Takaranta Shabdaha, Strilinga Shabdaha, feminine gender word. And this Upanishad, the entire Veda, is also known by another expression, Shrutihi. Shrutihi, because Vedic teaching has always been through oral tradition. Because the contents of the Veda are in the form of the knowledge which is expressed through words. And words are heard, and that is through communication, knowledge has been being transferred always. Therefore, it's sustained and maintained through oral tradition. Therefore, it's also heard and received and retained and maintained and preserved and perpetuated. Therefore, Veda Shastram is also known by another term, Shrutihi. Shrutihi is also feminine gender word, which means listening, that the body of knowledge which has been being heard, communicated, heard, thereby preserved, sustained, and perpetuated through oral tradition is known as Shrutihi. And Shruti is known as Mata, mother. Why? Because whoever takes care of the growth of an individual being is a mother. And a biological mother, definitely, not only does she give birth to the boy, she conceives. The time of conception is very careful in maintaining. Have the babies in the womb. After delivering, also the mother, biological mother, takes care of the physical growth and well-being of the child. As long as the child needs the help. But there is a limitation on the part of a biological mother, that she can take care of the physical growth and physical well-being. she does contribute for the emotional wellness, well-being also to a certain degree. But she has herself a limitation. And where the biological mother cannot do anything for an individual being, there enters another mother in the form of knowledge, in the form of words, who is present in the form of the teaching, and whose the understanding of the teaching, which helps us, takes care of our emotional well-being and emotional growth, is therefore, this is Veda, Chut Vedanta Shastram, Veda Mata. Therefore, the Vedic teaching takes care of our further emotional growth, which no mother or father can take care of. The clarity of vision, the right perception, right understanding. So these things, this is our emotional maturity is also needs to be taken care of. And Shruti, by her teaching, takes care of, contributes for our emotional well-being. How long does Shruti Mata help us? How long do we need? So we need our biological mother's help as long as we become physically independent. Similarly, we need Shruti Mata's help and support as long as we become emotionally independent. Once you become absolutely emotionally mature and refined, you will be emotionally independent. And emotional independence is moksha, freedom. Afterwards, we do not need the help of Shruti Mata also. That is why in second chapter of Bhagavad Gita, there is a beautiful verse. Yavanartha udapane sarvata samplutodake tavan sarveshu vedeshu brahmanasya vijanatah. See, how much is the value of all the Vedic scriptures? What is the value of the Vedic scriptures? How much are they useful? How much is the Vedic scripture useful? That verse says, Vijanataha Brahmanasya, for the person of clear vision of the truth, the most mature, absolutely refined minded person of clear vision of the truth of the whole, all the Vedas are of no use. They are as good as the water, reservoir full of water in a place of floods. Reservoir full of water is of great use in a place where there is no water at all. Whereas a place which is flooding, fill everywhere, the place of floods everywhere, water, 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 everywhere floods. In such a place, reservoir full of water is of no use. Similarly, for a person of vision of the truth, who is absolutely mature, for him all the shastras are also of no use. Which means shastras have served their purpose for him. Like that, we need Shruti Mata as long as we are emotionally dependent. And when the Shruti study of the Upanishads and blesses with the knowledge in the wake of which we become absolutely mature and refined, absolutely refined minded. We become emotionally independent, then we do not need Shruti Mata's help. We have respect for our biological mother, we bow to her, we have reverence for her, but we are not dependent on her. Physically, we are independent. Similarly, we have respect for Vedashastram, but we will not need her when you become emotionally independent. Okay, Shruti is Mata. Veda is Mata. And here, and therefore, Upanishad is also a feminine gender word, like the word Shrutihi is a feminine gender word. Upanishad also is a feminine gender word. And Upanishad itself, the word Upanishad has two meanings. One meaning is the primary meaning, direct, the important meaning. Another meaning is a secondary meaning. Upanishad means Brahma Vidya. Upanishad means Brahma Vidya. Brahma Vidya means Brahma is a word implying the reality. Vidya means knowledge. So Brahma Vidya means, so one compound word. Now you can understand Brahman is a nakarantaha napumsakalingaha Brahman shabdaha. In positive case, Brahmanaha Vidya. Two different words. Knowledge. Parambarudaya arivu. Brahmanaha Vidya. Brahma Vidya. Brahmanaha Vidya, two different words. Make it a compound. Brahma Vidya. Brahmanaha Vidya. Brahma Vidya. Knowledge of Brahma. Brahmanaha. Positive. So knowledge of the absolute reality implied by the term Brahma. Is it a direct meaning, immediate meaning of the word Brahma with Upanishad? No. It is not the immediate meaning of the word Upanishad. Even though primary meaning of the word Upanishad is Brahma Vidya, it is not an immediate meaning of the word Upanishad, which means it is derived. The meaning, this meaning Brahma Vidya, knowledge of reality, being the meaning of the word Upanishad, is derived from the components of the word Upanishad. The word Upanishad has components. Upa is one component. Ni is another component. Sarg, Shat is another component. You can see it has three components or two. Upani and Shat. You can see, take it as a word with the three components or two components. You can take both ways. Upa, ni, shat. Upa, ni, shat. From these components, this meaning is derived. See, these components actually indicate stands for functions, the effects of Brahma Vidya. See, knowledge of reality must be effective. It must be functional. What does knowledge of reality do? What can knowledge of the reality do? What should it do? What can it do? What does it do? Knowledge of reality once rises, ignorance will be resolved. Where knowledge is, there cannot be ignorance. Knowledge rises means ignorance will resolve. That is the first function. Resolving the ignorance. And actually, they use another term, destroys ignorance. I do not want you to take the literal meaning of the word destruction. Therefore, I prefer using the term, even though destroys is used, resolution of ignorance is the first function. Knowledge rises, ignorance resolves. This is the first. Once ignorance is resolved, because of ignorance, there is samsaraha. Bondage is helplessly being bound by this cycle of births and deaths is because of ignorance. And having to go through the life of limitations is because of ignorance. Having to go through the life of paths of opposites is because of ignorance. Having to suffer fear, anger, all emotions, anxiety, sorrow, grief, hurt, guilt are all because of ignorance. Therefore, samsara, the life of transmigration and the experiences, which is fraught with fear, anxiety, etc., is because of the ignorance. And ignorance is resolved means ignorance caused the samsara also will be resolved. When the ignorance is not there, samsara cannot be there. Samsara is only because of ignorance. Cause is, therefore effect is. Cause disappears, effect also will disappear. So in the wake of the knowledge of the truth, ignorance of the truth resolves. Along with the ignorance, simultaneously, ignorance caused to samsara also resolves. Therefore, resolution of samsara, resolution of ignorance and ignorance caused samsara is the first effect, first result or first benefit or the first function of the Brahma Vidya. Is it clear? Now, what second function? As long as ignorance is, so long the jiva is as though far away from Ishvara. As long as ignorance is, the jiva is as though far away from Ishvara. Jiva is mistake, Ishra is mistaken to be far away from Jiva. Jiva is mistaken to be far away from Ishra, which means there is a huge distance between Jiva and Ishra. The huge distance between Jiva and Ishra, this distance is not real distance. It is not physical distance. It is a distance caused by ignorance. Ignorance causes distance between Jiva and Ishvara. Because of the no distance, ignorance caused distance is there. In the wake of the knowledge of the truth, ignorance caused distance also becomes removed. The seeming distance, not physical distance, not real distance. The seeming distance, ignorance caused seeming distance is also removed. Becomes removed when the ignorance is resolved. Therefore, as though this knowledge is taking the Jiva near Ishvara, the knowledge does not really take the Jiva near the Ishvara. There's no real distance at all, but this ignorance caused the seeming distance is resolved. Therefore, Jiva is seemingly taken near Ishvara. Jiva is as though taken near Ishvara. So, knowledge reveals the fact of non-difference between Jiva and Ishvara. Knowledge reveals the fact of non-difference between Jiva and Ishvara. Knowledge reveals the oneness of Jiva and Ishvara. And Jiva is non-different from Ishvara. Therefore, the Brahma Vidya takes the Jiva near Ishvara as though. This Brahma Vidya reveals the non-difference. Revealing non-difference between Jiva and Ishvara. Oneness of Jiva and Ishvara becomes very clear. Therefore, another function is what? It takes the individual near Ishvara as though. This is another function. These two functions of what? First function, one function is Jiva being taken near Ishvara. Jivatma being taken near Paramatma. By resolving the notion caused against caused distance. The one function. Another function is against resolution of ignorance against caused samsara. These two functions are indicated by these components which constitute the word Upanishad. And which component denotes which function? Upa means near. Ni, taking. Ni stands for taking. Upa stands for near, prefix. And Sad is a Shat actually is modified form of the root sad. From sad, we get the verb avasadayati. Avasadayati means destroys. So, Brahma Vidya destroys. Brahma Vidya takes the Jiva near Paramatma. Jiva near Ishvara. Jivatma near Paramatma. How does it? Brahma Vidya destroys the ignorance. Ignorance caused samsara. That is denoted by the function of destruction of ignorance and samsara is denoted by the component sad. And upani to the prefix and the other one, ni. These two together indicates the function of the revealing the non-separateness between Jiva and Ishvara or essential oneness of Jiva and Ishvara. How? By resolving the distance, against cost distance, the Jiva is as though taken near Paramatma. So Jiva is taken near Paramatma. And this Brahma Vidya takes the Jiva near Paramatma. Which means the second function. And these two, Upani, Upanayati, Jivam, Ishwaram, Prati Upanayati, Iti Upani. Jivam, Ishwaram, Prati Upanayati. It takes the Jiva to Ishwara. Can knowledge really take the Jiva near Ishwara? Not physically taking. Cognitively helping the individual see the non-difference. Yes, intellectually, cognitively enabling the individual see the fact of the individual being non-different from total is what? Taking the Jiva near Paramatma, Ishvara. And how does it do? What does it do? Destroys ignorance and ignorance caused to samsara. This destruction of this is indicated by the component sad. And the sad alone becomes shat. How does sad root become sad and sad becomes shat? That is language class. Upanishad class, you know only this much. Upanishad. These components reveal us the two functions. So Upanishad does not give, directly does not mean Brahma Vidya. The components which form the word Brahma Vidya reveal the functions of Brahma Vidya. Thereby it implies Brahma Vidya. So Upanishad means Brahma Vidya. The word Brahma Vidya, the meaning of Upanishad being Brahma Vidya is derived from the components which indicate functions of Brahma Vidya. Is it clear? Now, Brahma Vidya, knowledge of reality, takes place where? On your teeth, forehead, or thigh, or stomach. Where does knowledge take place? Knowledge of anything should take place only in the mind. So Brahma Vidya also should take place only in the mind. And where is the mind? Is mind outside the body or inside the body? Mind is definitely subtle It pervades the body. Mind is inside, internal. Therefore, knowledge takes place where? In the mind. If knowledge takes place in the mind, knowledge, Brahma Vidya is knowledge, and knowledge takes place in the mind in the form of a thought. That knowledge alone is the primary meaning of the word Upanishad. But what do? We say textbook which we are studying is outside, and the textbook also is known by the term Upanishad. So textbook is only a secondary meaning. The book which you have in your hand, or the book in the form of, you know, consisting of words, is outside the body. Isn't it? Comes out in the form of word, means word comes out of the mouth. So book is, textbook is external, knowledge is internal. Knowledge is in the form of a thought, whereas a book consisting of words are expressions of thought which are external. So book also is meant by the word Upanishad, because this textbook serves as a means of knowledge. Therefore, textbook also is known by the term Upanishad. The textbook is only a secondary meaning, because text serves as a means of knowledge. But knowledge is the primary meaning, and the means of knowledge is the secondary meaning. Knowledge is Prama. And textbook is what? Pramanam. The word Upanishad has two meanings, Prama and Pramanam. Brahma Vidya is knowledge. Another word for knowledge is what? Prama. Upanishad, the textbook, is what? Means of knowledge. It is Pramanam. Is it clear? Now, Upanishad has, the word Upanishad has two meanings. One meaning is knowledge of the truth, Brahma. Another meaning is textbook, which is secondary meaning. And the meaning Brahma Vidya, which is derived from the components of the words indicating the functions of Brahma Vidya. Therefore, that meaning is called Yaugika Artha. Yaugika Artha means meaning derived from components of the word. I think I'll stop the class. I didn't want to do too much. I want to introduce just. Om. Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vasishyate Om Shanti 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 Harihi Om Tat Sat Shri Guru Namaha Harihi Om.